next week marks a grisly milestone for Rwanda. 10 years ago, the tiny Central African nation erupted in a wave of bloodshed between the country's two largest ethnic groups. Hundreds of thousands of Tutsi and moderate Hutu were killed, many of them by Rwandan death squads known as the Interahamwe. Estimates of the number of women raped during the slaughter run into the hundreds of thousands. But the Rwandan government is finding it very difficult to prosecute cases of sexual violence. Michael Cavanaugh reports from the capital, Kigali.
As a way of managing the impossible task of justice in Rwanda, the government decided to separate those who committed genocide into four categories. Category 4 encompassed petty crimes, like property destruction, while Category 1 was reserved for the genocide's masterminds and its most vicious killers. When it was discussed what category rape should be placed in, for the women who had been victims, there was no question. Category 1. Mary Bellen Kungeri runs the Rwandan Women's Network in Kigali.
Yeah, so much violence that our women were massively raped and tortured and mutilated. And what we are doing now is addressing the legacies of all that ugly past.
Giving rape the same status as the most gruesome murders recognized the severity of both the act and its lingering consequences. And it was hailed all over the world as a great victory for the rights of women. Markumu Araz Karamangua sought out the help of the Rwandan Women's Network after she was raped during the genocide.
When the genocide started, the Interahamwe used so many weapons. They used machetes, guns, but the worst weapon for women was rape.
In the spring of 1994, Markuma's husband was murdered by the Hutu Interahamwe. That night, she was tied to the bed in her home. During the day, the Interahamwe would man the roadblocks along the streets outside Kigali, and at night, they would return to rape her. She estimates that she was raped by over 25 different men over 100 days. And like many victims of rape during the genocide, Markuma has AIDS.
I thank God for being alive, even though I have AIDS, because so many people died during the genocide. And the reason why I'm talking about it, I want the whole world to know what happened in Rwanda. And I want Interahamwe to be punished accordingly.
In some ways, Markuma is one of the lucky ones. She found a support network that helped rebuild her life. It will take care of her 6 children when she dies, and it has helped prepare her to tell her story to Rwandan courts. But for most victims of rape, this is not true. Klaus DeJong works for Penal Reform International.
First thing to say if you talk about rape is that it is, in every culture, but especially here, for women, very difficult to discuss it.
Rwandan women have serious concerns about retribution by the person they accuse and public shunning in their village, by friends, family, and even by their husbands. Again,
so I think you have to be careful to say people, yeah, you have all to confess, because you can't protect them. There's no reparation, and they are even double victimized because they lost their families, they were raped, and now they have to go through a process what is also traumatizing.
Advocates for these women are supporting a program in which women can give their testimony in secret to a judge or to a surrogate who can testify on their behalf. But even with this concession, justice isn't guaranteed. In exchange for shortened sentences, the Rwandan government is pressuring prisoners to confess to crimes during the genocide. But getting men to confess to rape is proving nearly impossible. What was at first seen as a great victory for victims, giving rape the status of Category 1 crimes, might actually be working against them. Again, Klaus DeJong.
Nobody confesses for rape because the first category, you risk to have death penalty, or even if you confess, 25 years. So nobody is very motivated to say that he raped somebody.
6,000 men and women sporting the pink suits that all Rwandan prisoners wear fight for space in Kigali Central Prison. Jean Gilbert Mugabaho has been in jail here for almost 10 years, though he insists he's innocent. In the prison's hierarchy, he runs Gachacha, a traditional judicial process that is attempting to collect confessions from the accused. He's listened to thousands of testimonies, but he's heard just 2 people confess to rape. And one of those confessions was from a woman who admitted she had sexually tortured another woman. Without these confessions, it will be extremely difficult to bring convictions, leaving women with a terrible choice. The alienation that testifying might bring, or the pain of living with horrible memories and no hope of justice.
Do we continue to cry internally among ourselves here?
Mary Balankungeri of the Rwandan Women's Network.
Who is willing to be able to say what has happened to us so that we may see the history of Rwanda rewritten?
10 years after, it's not clear that writing this part of Rwanda's history will ever be possible. In Kigali, I'm Michael Kavanagh.